This is broadcast number 569, November the 1st, 1982. It's Mae Brussel and KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. I'm not going to do too much about the elections because by the time the tape subscribers get the cassette, the elections are over. We can analyze the winners or losers because what I say this evening won't have much effect on the election. I get disgusted with a lot of people who vote independent when out here particularly we should be voting against a particular Pete Wilson in San Diego. But I don't have any fear about that now because he's so corrupt and so linked to the vast corruptions that if he wins, just as Richard Nixon won in 1972, Pete Wilson has to pay at least $70,000 in back taxes. That won't be hard with the kind of people behind him, but then you investigate the people behind him. So we'll analyze that later. And in case you think I was hard on the Republican candidate, I might tell you that the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, banker Charles T. Manatt, M-A-N-A-T-T, is on the board of Flying Tiger International. That's known as Air Opium, also linked to Kirk Kerkorian and that Neil Berg saga I referred to on the first side of the broadcast. The Flying Tigers got started as the arms to Chinese nationalist leader Chiang Kai-shek in the 1930s. If you don't know how he doped China, you might read some books on Southeast Asia and the doping of that country and the collection of huge amounts of capital by the ruling class by doping the masses and trading in narcotics. They went on later to open up Southeast Asia's Golden Triangle via the great Flying Tigers, Air America. It's widely acknowledged or recognized as a CIA front, and Democratic National Committee Chairman Mr. Manatt is on the board along with Madame Chenault from that organization, whose husband was the original flyer of Air Opium, is on the board of directors of 20th Century Fox, along with, you see the connection there, Marvin Davis and Frank Sinatra, his closest friend. We don't detail 20th tonight, but I think you get where the Democratic National Committee chairman is on the board of Air Opium. And so it goes, I've said before, and I'll keep reporting it for new listeners or for old listeners, when you vote for a president of the United States, you're voting for one narcotic route versus the other. If they're going to drive the cocaine route from Colombia, then they'll let the Bolivia flow. If one president comes in, he'll bring it in from Peru with the Peru king. There are turfs, just as the country was divided up after the Appalachian meeting in 1957. There are turfs of narcotic traffic, and until we get the dope out, O-U-T, out of this country and out of the White House and out of the Attorney General's offices, you will see increasing deaths, increasing murders, corporations going bankrupt, and more crime than you can visualize. What is described as terrorism is nothing compared to what the dope money does or what that $60 million would do in the streets of Los Angeles that DeLorean would have spread around to put the cash in his own little corporation to keep his image of one of the beautiful people. Now, for several weeks I've mentioned the role of Attorney General William French Smith in the Operation Swordfish, calling attention to the arrests that were going to take place in Florida 4 hours before so that 16 to 26 people escaped. Now, in the last week, in the course of 8 days or so, William French Smith has made major errors in the four largest drug cases in the United States that encompass the world drug market, and he should be removed as much as John Mitchell was removed at the time of Watergate. Operation Swordfish was won in September 26, where 16 to 26 people flew away from the Miami area, and that included the white upper class, the doctors, the bankers, the DeLoreans, the lawyers, and he let that element free because very important people got away, and it will reduce the ability to prosecute these people. Operation TikTok was thrown out last week, or just the beginning of the month. 1,000 hours of tape recordings were thrown out. That's that large 18-month investigation in Florida. Now, that involved the schleppers, not the bankers and the lawyers and doctors. That involved the CIA anti-Castro Cubans that murdered everyone from John Kennedy, working with Frank Sturgis, Frank Fiorina, through Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Salvador Allende, Letelier, blowing up the Cuban Airlines, blowing up airports, people's legs falling off in Miami, the international terrorist group involved with the huge cocaine narcotics traffic that ties into the CIA assassins and the Nguyen Van Bank in Australia. the Nazis, the assassins, and the Defense Department admirals from the Nguyen Bank and generals also. But Operation TikTok was thrown out. The excuse for wiretapping people is to get organized crime or drug people. And when they had 1,000 hours of tape, the judge had to let none of that be admissible because that went right up to George Bush, the vice president, who was CIA director in charge of the Nguyen operation as the director when heroin cocaine from Southeast Asia was pouring into 16 major countries and used for assassinations, and in return they kept the profit from the dopes. Operation TikTok was thrown out. January the 1st, William French Smith said he was going to be hard on the drug people. That was thrown out. John DeLorean and William M. Morgan Hetrick were arrested, along with their other co-worker, Mr. Arrington. We'll do on that next week. But 11 to 14 pilots left the country. 28 banks were emptied. They knew where the banks were. They knew how many pilots. That's the Hollywood connections that goes up to Ronald Reagan and up to Santa Barbara and Camarillo and down to the scenes of the actors and the John Belushi hit. Okay, up on La Cienega, the drug dealers from Hollywood, the major entertainment people, the Johnny Carsons and the Sammy Davises and company and through the entire Republican and Democratic parties. Hetrick was a well-known, one of the largest drug dealers in the country. He was being investigated or watched when John DeLorean, a long friend of his, connected. They let the pilots get away and the overseas banks and the California banks go just as identical to Watergate when they went to Marie Stand's office and shredded night and day what was in there. And then the murder of Kevin Mulcahy, primary witness against a man. He's so important, Edwin Wilson. He's on $20 million bond and he's been locked up. He's so important. Kevin said his life was in danger for 5 years. He's been trying to get the CIA and the FBI and the Justice Department to find out what is going on with the Central Intelligence Agency arming Gaddafi, training schools of terrorists, plans to blow up the oil in the Middle East. He made outrageous allegations, and the trial was starting, and he was a primary witness. And instead of giving him protection, he takes CIA documents and goes to a cabin and pays a month rent when the trial was supposed to begin in Houston, Texas, for Edwin Wilson sending explosives on commercial airlines. You may think, well, this is academic, what May is talking about. I can't understand it. But when a plane blows up the Pan Am leaving New Orleans and completely shatters, there are explosives on it. And next week I'll talk about Mr. Hetrick, DeLorean's pal, who has been a primary witness for trials where planes have blown up. He's an expert on airplanes, and Edwin Wilson and company are experts on blowing them up. So you get both ends. One blows it up and the other testifies. And meanwhile, the real experts can't find the cause of the accidents. But the truth is that the experts or the people who do the autopsies and the experts on the airline crashes that you or your loved ones are going to be on or were on are also linked with the people who blow up the planes, and this can be documented through articles and court cases over and over again. Well, Kelvin said for several years he was afraid he would die. The headlines of some of the stories, ex-CIA man who informed on Libya conspirators found dead. You get the word if you're an informer. That's what Mr. Lewis says, alias that Richardson. Out of the Tylenol case, he says, this is the thanks I get for helping the police and the FBI. You put my picture in the paper. Okay, the ex-CIA man who informed is dead. Catch that. Any other agents? Former CIA whistleblower found dead. That's another headline. Get the message? Don't be a whistleblower. Like Martha Mitchell, who said, you know, I saw something dirty in the White House, and she was injected with a needle. A phone was pulled off the wall, and she never saw her daughter for 3 years and died that cancer. Another headline, Libya CIA case witness dies. Witness in the CIA case, okay? Not ex-CIA. Headlines in the Chronicle, CIA. Authorities still unsure how CIA man died. This time they call him the ex. They're unsure how he died. And this is very important because the CIA has perfected and told us 3,000 times they made medications that killed you without a trace. So why are they spending so long figuring out how he died? Why don't they go into what he was saying? You'll never find it on an autopsy. Headline, New York Times, autopsy draws a blank in death of CIA witness. Why don't they have the quotation of the CIA people themselves from the top on down who say you die without a trace? The guy has no bullets. He doesn't have emphysema. He wasn't drunk. He didn't have a lung condition. There was nothing to show how he died except that he had these documents in his place and a lot of crazy circumstances, such as the death of Grace Kelly. But why sit and worry? Another story headline was CIA analyst really poisoned? Really poisoned. And ex-CIA aide had pneumonia when he died, but the tests explored the possibility of poisoning. Kevin McElhaney goes along with the Great Britain investigation of Roberta Calvi, a suicide hanging over that bridge the way he was found. Everybody in Europe, every single person except the London police, and they know it too, know that Roberta Calvi was murdered. He had 11 bodyguards because his best friend had his knees blown out a few weeks before, and he said that was for me. That message was for me, but he didn't have his bodyguards the night that he was hanging over that bridge in London. And Kevin goes into the same category. Why was Kevin Mulcahy important? Maybe next week I'll do 1.5 hour on some of the Kevin McElhaney statements. What he left behind is for you to carry, your legacy. That's what's important. He's gone now. He lived, he died, but he had enough in print to tell you, the future generation, of what to do. Now, I'm going to zero in on two elements, or one major element, of the contribution of Kevin McElhaney and what he knew. And this has to do, again, with one of my favorite subjects, which is Helene Von Dahm, because she's so important. She's been, Ronald Reagan wants to appoint her the ambassador to Vienna. That's Steve Sagan's full circle again, from Vienna to Vienna, where her mother lives. And I'm going to give you some points here. It'll be on the sheet that accompanies the tape, not in such detail. But here is the what Kevin was doing and how it affects the appointment of Helene Von Dahm in Vienna. He had to be killed because of what he knew what Ronald Reagan's going to do in the future, as much as what he said. He said already what was happening, and if we investigated that, you'd understand the picture. As I said before, I'm putting this in chronological order. William Clark, of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, the Vatican Knight, brought Helene Von Dahm to this country when she first came here. And he is the national security advisor now. He took over Henry Kissinger's job. And he was in counterintelligence in Europe when he brought over his Swiss wife and Helene Von Dahm from Vienna. She also was brought under the Reinhardt-Gehlen organization of Hitler's major spy agency that set up the CIA. She was set up, second point, in Detroit, the home of John DeLorean, Henry Ford and the Motor Company, the Lindbergh, Morgan, Hitler, Mussolini, Money Channel, as well as the anti-Semitic literature coming out of Detroit. I could give you a who's who of Detroit and New Jersey and their links that come up in almost every single case now, including like the Continental Bank of Illinois. She went to Detroit and worked for a medical association. Warner Lambert, of course, again, the American Cancer Society, working with Otto von Bulschwing. She stayed in Detroit until Ronald Reagan became governor in California. Point three, Reagan is governor in 1968 to 1974. Helene Von Dahm comes to California and becomes the secretary of the new Fuhrer, that's Ronald Reagan, put together by Stanford University and the Tsarist White Russians from the time he was an early star in Hollywood. She works for him 8 years. And in that time, in the year 1971 to 1972, in those years of terrible turmoil, she not only works for Ronald Reagan, but simultaneously invests her own money and is a translator secretary for a corporation set up called TCI in Sacramento. Now, many of you have heard this route before, but then I'm going to take it one step further to Kevin McElhaney and the appointment of Helene in Vienna. She is working simultaneously for Ronald Reagan while she's working for a firm that was set up, TCI, by six people were used as a front, and then came in the big heavies, John Paul Getty and Mr. Senecas and the head of Fairchild and the Otto von Bulschwing organization. After it was set up, they came in while she was working for them, headquarters in Sunnyvale, California, and in Sacramento. Point number five, while TCI was set up, they then offered and splintered into various groups that went into heavy electronic surveillance, into atomic weapons with Gulf in Long Beach with the Shah of Iran and listening posts and setting up that Odessa spy network through the corporate cover. And in Sunnyvale, California, as part of that came Frank Turple, the fellow who puts rats on stomachs to eat them out while you're alive and tortures and set up the torture equipment for Idi Amin and weapons for Gaddafi. Frank Turple worked with Stanford Technology and Edwin Wilson, too, when he was working for Edwin Wilson and Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins of the Central Intelligence Counterintelligence Operations, violently anti-Semitic, all linked to world Nazis. Frank Turple enters the Sunnyvale Stanford Technology Group, which is part of TCI, while Helene is working. Now, Frank Turple is working in Washington, D.C. with Edwin Wilson in the offices out of Washington, D.C. that Kevin McCullough joins. And I'll give you a closer biography next week on Kevin. He joins that firm. His father is 22 years with the CIA from the time, I guess it was the OSS, till the CIA. He gets the highest commendations. His brothers are in the CIA. And he is set in Edwin Wilson's office. Now, on the board of Edwin Wilson's office, he's long CIA. He worked with Theodore Shackley. He was one of the paymasters for the Bay of Pigs and the arrangement of the murder of John Kennedy with the anti-Castro Cubans. In the offices of Edwin Wilson in Washington, D.C., he switches like from a CIA cover to Navy Intelligence Task Force 157 that George Bush was the head of, and when he was CIA director. And in that office, 1970 to 1975, is a man named Robert Gray. He's on the board of directors of the CIA Extermination Counterintelligence Anti-Semitic faction in Washington, D.C., the Nazi Odessa Network. Robert Gray works 5 years with Edwin Wilson, Frank Turple, and Kevin McCullough. 1970 to 1975, he's with Edwin Wilson. He's on the board. Now, Robert Gray moves on later to become in charge of Ronald Reagan's Inauguration Committee. Ronald Reagan has left California. He's had 8 years of testing himself, his riots, his SLA, the CIA that was done here in California with this Nazi Operation Chaos coming out of Washington and the military. He's now going to be president. He won the election. Robert Gray is in charge of the Inauguration Committee. That's when they invite their buddy, you know, Frank Sinatra, to put on the inaugural ball, and Licio Gelli, who has fled recently, he's now in Switzerland, the one who fled to Argentina, the head of the secret Masonic Nazi group I mentioned earlier on the other side. Robert Gray, along with Helene von Damm, they're in the transition team. They're going to Washington. She's to have a room right next to Ronald Reagan. She approves of the cabinet positions, the marshal positions. She's anybody escorting criminals. Helene von Damm is in charge of all appointments right now, and she'll go to Vienna if we let her and don't send enough letters. Now, Robert Gray is in charge of Ronald Reagan's inauguration in Washington, D.C., after having come 5 years on the board of Edwin Wilson with Theodore Shackley, Frank Turple, the Kevin McCullough connections. We're closely in Washington, transition team, the inauguration, and so forth. Helene von Damm, Ronald Reagan, Robert Gray, Edwin Wilson, and company. Okay, now, point number seven. When Edwin Wilson's organization sent Frank Turple and Kevin McCullough to London, Kevin was meeting with a man, Sven, S-V-E-N, Hoffeiner, H-O-F-F-E-I-N-E-R. He's a Viennese. He's from Vienna, like Helene von Damm. He comes from Vienna, has restaurants in London. And Kevin went to a yacht party with that was given by Sven and made a mistake of taking his camera. And he was apprehended. He worked very well with Frank Turple, who was sending murderous equipment all over the world. He worked very well with him, but he made the mistake of taking some pictures. Who was on the yacht? The famous Carlos the Jackal, Carlos Ramirez, the man who engineered the Munich Games, the killing of the Jewish athletes, the fellow in charge of Rome's it's spelled F-I-U-M-I-C-I-N-O. I don't pronounce Italian. Fiumicino Airport in Rome, the Paris murders, airport hijackings, the Israeli airline that went down to Uganda, you name it. Carlos, there are many books on Carlos, you can get them. Carlos the Jackal, one of the most vicious Nazi anti-Semites, was socializing with Kevin McCullough, and Kevin was told, well, don't take your camera, but Kevin told Seymour Hersh of the New York Times, and it was printed in the New York Times, the role of Kevin with these people and socializing with Carlos. The story that Interpol or the international police want Carlos is a crock of what Pete Wilson makes to get a tax write-off in Texas. Okay? Now, these people were working together. Mrs. Helene von Dahm keeps the German name. Her husband, Byron Leeds, met her when he was in the army in Vienna. She wants to be the ambassador to Vienna. And the Viennese provider of the weapons for South Africa, he diverted weapons that were going to Libya and Uganda also, and to the PLO, and arming the PLO, were being diverted to South Africa. And this particular fellow from Vienna should be checked out, Sven Hoffeiner, H-O-F-F-E-I-N-E-R. Now, were Kevin McCullough's allegations true? I believed he died for them, and I think we should check into them. But if you want to verify them, look at the newspapers this past week on holding up the funds of the United States to the United Nations, because the United Nations was funding, until somebody caught on, the School for Terrorism under the guise of a trade school run by the PLO. There were stories in the San Francisco Chronicle, New York Times on this school. The story is that the trade school in Beirut, Lebanon, was run by the United Nations Relief Fund. The money was sent by the United Nations, by us and tax dollars, into Beirut. The United Nations put $67 million into this fund, $67 million out of a $161 million agency budget for this. And the United States was holding back $15 million just last week, but I understand the school has changed locations now. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency has been training Palestinians and sending money since 1950, and there's a school called the Siblin Training Center, S-I-B-L-I-N, Training Center, for Relief Works Agency. And the money comes out of Vienna, from Vienna to the Siblin Trade Agency, a man named Olaf Feedback, O-L-E-F. That's his first name, F-Y-D-B-E-C-A. The Commissioner General in Vienna sent the money by the United Nations to Beirut, Lebanon. Now, what was the training school? In order to have a trade for the PLO, those poor people, the relief fund that we're sending to them so they can learn to be teachers or pharmacists or whatever it is, or for agricultural training, if you don't want to live in a tent and you want to go to the UN school, you go to the trade school, the Siblin Training Center. But you take several years of your trade, but simultaneously, you can't get your degree until you have 1 year of terrorism. And down in the basement of the school, the United States was sending weapons. And when they went into the school, there were in the locker basement 500 automatic rifles, 20 rocket-propelled grenade launchers, ammunition, radio equipment. One of the conditions of getting a degree to have a skill out of the PLO, run by the United Nations, was that you have to be a terrorist for 1 year. You have to bomb, you have to kill, you have to throw grenades, then come back and we'll let you be a teacher. So if you hired a former PLO through the United Nations Fund, it comes through Vienna. Again, a Viennese in London with Wilson Turple, Kevin McCullough, who is funding South Africa, Idi Amin, and planning to blow up oil wells in the Middle East for maybe American oil companies. I can't even imagine why, and I've talked about Kevin's allegations on that before. But it's important because he was socializing with Carlos. Now, we get propaganda out of Reader's Digest, out of ABC News, NBC, you name it. Claire Sterling has written a book, The Terror Network, and I have the book, unfortunately. I have to use it for research. They want to blame radical, impoverished third world people and the Soviet Union for this link that goes all over the world for terrorism. And yet the United Nations knowingly has a school in the basement, and the part of the exercises after school and before school are in military training, in training people to blow up bridges, to blow up trains. And if you think there's been too many trains spilled lately or too many major crashes, believe me that they've been trained in skills and they're exercising their muscle in kidnapping and bombing and so forth. To bring on this great Armageddon that they, again, those Christian churches are funded by this Nazi overseas money, these Bible churches on television, millions and billions of missing money, telling you that the Third War, the Holocaust, the Armageddon will take place in the Middle East. Meanwhile, very real people with real names in real cities are identifying that it isn't a biblical prophecy. This is very important to get into our heads. These are people giving millions and many, many millions out of an organization, say, the United Nations could send that to train people in impoverished areas to feed themselves and have water and homes. Instead, we give it to World Vision, which is a Christian CIA front, like a lot of these other organizations that are informers in Cambodia and overturned companies in Guatemala and so forth. And the John Hinckley family, of course, was closely aligned to that. These PLO training schools exist, and I'm sure that there isn't just one isolated case where they're trained. In Beirut, Lebanon isn't the only place where they're trained. Gaddafi still has a lot of the technology and the ammunition that we sent over there. But the important thing is that people in our government, who I really think are mentally sick, and I also think that the only thing to explain this to them and to ourselves is a holy war, and I go back again to the Inquisition and the Middle Ages. Every single person involved with Kevin McCullough and Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple, their superiors, belongs to an organization, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. They've been knighted. Their allegiance is to keep the Church of Rome on top, no matter what, and the means justifies the end. If James Angleton of the CIA, and I mention again the people that belong to this organization, Robert Abplanalp down in the Bahamas, Richard Nixon's friend, Joseph Bettinger founded the Bilderbergers with Prince Bernard, William and James Buckley, William Casey, William Clark, Mr. Peter Flanagan from Nixon's team, Alexander Haig, belonging to these grand lodges to the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, John McCone, Vernon Walters, J. Peter Grace, Reinhard Galen, they all belong to two organizations. One is Rome and the other is the Central Intelligence Agency and the local police, again, funneled down from there. The Vienna connections have never ended. When Hitler left, whether he died or escaped, the Vienna connections to Carlos, to London, to the American intelligence is intact. In Beirut, to get a trade, you have to get money from Vienna, from United Nations Relief Fund, and go to bombing school. Now, we held up a few million dollars last week, $15 million, to see what was going on. But there's no accounting for $100, $200, $300 million that went there before. Remember Mark David Chapman, who shot John Lennon, and we'll do the anniversary of Lennon in 1 month, went to Beirut, Lebanon for 6 months, came home an expert killer, and everybody said, well, he didn't have any training for shooting. He stood down and aimed, got John with one bullet. He was trained in Beirut, Lebanon, by the same CIA that have been sending money to Beirut for that purpose, to get rid of people who have mass demonstrations for peace and otherwise. Well, I think we've covered a lot of material. I do want next week to go into the allegations of Kevin, because he, as I say before, he is dead, but what he said is alive. And why did he come forward and say these things to the FBI and the CIA? He came forward not because he's a pristine angel, but because he got sick of what they were doing, and he wanted to make sure that he had the CIA approval. So he went to the offices of Edwin Wilson to get some papers, and they had comments about references to killing somebody and getting rid of them and their murderous activities. And then among the papers, he found his own name, and his handwriting was forged, and they were going to make him responsible for things that were going to happen in the future. Now, that is very important, because the use of forgery has started World War I, World War II. It has covered up the murders of presidents and elections in this country, so that you have to have no choice but a Ronald Reagan. The others are all wiped out. There were forgeries of Oswald's diary, and he didn't kill John Kennedy. The forgery of Sirhan's diary, and he didn't do the fatal bullet in Robert Kennedy. And Martin Luther King and James Earl Ray's writings and comments in the biography of his family, that doesn't hold either. Incidentally, just to close on John DeLorean and interesting connections that I say who is behind all this, John DeLorean, when he's in New York City in his $5 million apartment, according to Time magazine this week, goes to St. Patrick's on Fifth Avenue every single day. He's a devout Catholic, and St. Patrick's, if you remember my broadcast on the Sovereign Military Order of Malta with the Cardinal Cook and Cardinal Spellman, it is the headquarters of the United States Inquisition team. And I'm not anti-Catholic any more than I'm anti-Jewish, and I do promise in next week or two to get into Begin, the Mussolini fascist material that was very valuable that was sent to me on explaining some more about Mr. Menachem Begin and his training with Mussolini and what he was doing in Poland to betray the Jews before he left there. But the important thing is that DeLorean is a devout Catholic, again, with international connections and national. Millions in Utah, in Nevada, companies, corporations, offshore banking, banks, 23 million or more in a Swiss bank. His car company was set up like that TCI in California, but he didn't go there. He didn't care about the cars. He didn't go to the meetings. He was hardly seen. Once the network was set up, he could do his international traveling for whatever it was for, but a daily visitor to St. Patrick's. More on that next week because I'm out of time now. This is Mae Brussel. It is KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. I'll be back with you next week.